Welcome to another edition of Turned Out a Punk. I'm your host, Damian Abraham, and once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, my buddy, my pal from the band Portugal the Man, the great John Gourley, is on the show today, and John and I go way back. More on that in 1 second, but first, if you want to get in touch with this podcast, just head over to the email address, turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and show producer and guest booker extraordinaire. Like, John and I are friends, and I couldn't get him to come on the show for forever, and then Tristan made it happen. So thank you, Tristan, for all the hard work you do for the show. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Left4Damian. There is a YouTube page, a TikTok page, an Instagram page, TikTok and YouTube, and a Facebook page, all for Turned Out a Punk. All those can be found at Turned Out a Punk on their respective platforms. And they're all run by Tristan pretty much too. But there's videos up on there. Like we do, I do these Turned Out a Punk videos now, and there's other stuff. There's other things that go up on those feeds. So check them and follow them all out. And if you want to support the show, the best way to support the show is by telling all your friends about it, letting everyone you know that likes punk that there's this podcast, and they interview all sorts of people on it about punk. And yeah, that's how you spread the word. I also play in a band, and you can support the band by heading over to fuckedup.cc and checking out some of the stuff we have going on. We're going to be going on tour with the great Superchunk in the new year, at the end of January, along the West Coast up of the United States up into Canada. My favorite place to tour. Like, going to the West Coast in January with Superchunk, cannabis legalization being where it's at right now. Oh, we're going to have a good time. Come out and hang out. And you can find out all those dates over at fuckedup.cc. We also got records for sale and all sorts of things. We put out a record this year called One Day. It's on the fantastic Merge Records, run partly by, well, Mac and Laura from Superchunk run it. And you can check out that record. Very proud of that record. Also very proud of the Danko Jones latest record, which I sing on a bunch of tracks on right now. Danko just told me the other day that I Want to Get High is like top 10 in Germany right now as a song. So that's wild. I've never had a top 10 song, I don't think, in my life. Certainly not with Fucked Up. And also, I got to put out an EP with my buddies, like my best friends in the world, who also we did covers with earlier this year with Fucked Up, The Hallucination. So you can check out all those groups and see some of the stuff that I've been up to and check out what I do when I'm not punishing people about punk. I think that's it. Do I have anything else to say? No, that's it. Okay, on to today's show. As I said off the top, John Gourley is here. John is someone that I also said off the top, I've known for a very long time. First met Portugal the Man way back when in Rotterdam at, I think it was called Friendship Day Festival, which is very apropos because I kind of hit it off of them immediately. Great people. And to watch their, you know, it's not like a meteoric rise because they worked hard and it took a while to do this, but it just shows you like they can write some songs because here they are winning Grammys. Their songs are played all over the place. They are a unbelievable band, and I'm very, very fortunate to call them my friends because they're also great people too. And I'm not just saying that because they're my friends. Like, you look at what they do with their platform and what they're doing as a band, and it's, you can tell that they're trying to make it more than just an ego trip, which can't always be said for successful bands. And they are certainly successful. They've won Grammys. They've got hit songs, and they've got a brand new, fantastic, beautiful record called Chris Black Changed My Life in tribute to their friend and band family member, band member, Chris Black, who passed away. Once again, a fantastic record. This band knows how to write songs, beautiful songs, great songs. They are going to be going on tour all throughout February in the United States. And then I think they're going to Mexico after that in March for a festival, I believe. So get your tickets now. Go and see Portugal the Man. Great live band. Ah, such an amazing live band. I'm not going to ramble on anymore. I'm going to let you listen to this episode. We talk about Paul Williams. I never get to do that on Turned Out a Punk. And that's like my favorite songwriter ever. You'll hear all about it in a second. All right, so sit back, relax, and enjoy John Gourley on Turned Out a Punk. John, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm so happy to be here.
This has been literally years in the making. Like, we talked about doing this, God, like 5 years ago now, I think.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, we've been looking for an excuse to hang out anyway for
exactly
that. So.
Yeah. And what better way than on Zoom in the course of an interview to hang out with someone and really let your hair down. But hopefully this isn't like a normal interview and it's just more like a chill hangout. But I will awkwardly insert how I met you probably at some point in the story too, and we can talk about that. But we got to start this off the way they all start off, which is, John, how'd you get into punk? Remember the first time you came across it?
First time I came across punk?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is like, I grew up in Wasilla, Alaska. We actually had this, we were all like hanging out and like with like the skate scene. You know, that was kind of popping off at the time. So just hanging out together, we would go to these like out in front of the ATV shop and be skateboarding there, you get kicked out. You go skate in front of the bank, you get kicked out. And, you know, skate in the cars, the supermarket parking lot, you get kicked out. So these kids, like, we're like traveling around, we're getting kicked out of every place. Wes Hubbard, our original keyboard player, and Zach Carruthers, our bassist, they decide that we're going to go to City Hall, Sarah Palin at the time, and they're going to talk to Sarah about getting a skate park built. So they go in, just start the discussion at these City Hall meetings, and they're asking for a skate park. It's going to be about $150,000, and Sarah says to them, if you can raise half the money, if you can raise $70,000, $75,000, we'll give you the skate park. And this is the thing about Sarah Palin. She does not understand community. She does not understand Alaskan community. She doesn't understand what it is to be a kid who's not on the cheerleading squad or in the football team. She doesn't know what that is. Those kids raised that money so quick. They went to like the same ATV shop, the Honda shop that kicked them out, donated a four-wheeler and a snow machine, and they raffled it off. They got the money. So they got this money so fast. Everybody donated. And then it took a year of City Hall meetings because they raised the money so quick. Sarah said that she just wasn't expecting them to do it. You know, so these kids had to show up at City Hall meetings and be like, the end of every meeting, go, hey, remember the skate park? Like, remember the skate park that we talked about? We got to get that built. And it just took so much time going through that process. And you just realize, like, yo, these people, man, like in that same period, she built a $15 million ice rink closer to her side of the town. We live in a small town, dude. Like, we have an ice rink. There's a hockey rink. And she spent $15 million building this other skate rink because it benefited her and her folks. But these kids that raised the money, they were just like, forget about them. So my introduction to punk is really on a like, it's not, I wouldn't say it was like a musical thing for me. It was seeing how this process works, seeing how easy it is for you when you're helping your people. But you forget about all these subgroups and these other people around, you know, there's other people here. Like, we all live together and we should all operate together. And that's what community is about. And to me, punk has always been that more than it's been. It's just being organized. You know, how do I fix this? Like, how do I improve this situation for people around me? And how do I make my voice heard?
Yeah. Like, it's always been about community building as much as it's been like, and building something from nothing, or finding something where there should be something and putting it there. And
There's such an amazing tradition of it too, coming from Alaska. Like, you know, there's that skate death band and Klingons and psychedelic skeletons. And they ran like, I got like a label flyer for them, and they ran a video distribution thing and like a, you know, just built a scene.
Dang, you know, it's crazy. I know none of the things you just said.
You know, it's funny. Fred Armisen did a show in Juneau like 2 nights ago, and he hit me up. He's like, yo, what are some Alaskan punk bands? And I'm like, oh, Skate Death. Like, mention Skate Death, mention Klingons, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And he goes out there and he mentions Skate Death. And after the show, the drummer was at the show and was like, oh my God, that's my band.
No way.
Yeah. I think I talked to Zach a little bit about it too. He said he had heard of Skate Death, and there was kind of like a holdover. A little bit, because it is skateboarding and it's punk, right? So there is sort of that kind of tradition in a way in Alaska, certainly.
Yeah, you know, Zach and Eric were like really tapped into the music scene there, like played in all the bands. They did all that stuff. I come from a dog mushing family. Like, we lived in the woods. Like I legit like grew up in a, like we had a one bedroom cabin. We would take baths in the tin tub, like the trough. And yeah, we come to town, and I mean, dude, like seeing Eric and Zach play, that was like the big like wheels turning moment where I'm going to school. I had done 2 years homeschool, 7th and 8th grade, went back to school in freshman year to try and like fit in with people as a, like, you know, I'm this like woods kid. I remember going to school, and like that first, I think it was within the first month, Zach and Eric's band played in the Commons area at lunchtime, and they were covering like Rage Against the Machine and Pantera and Slayer and Cannibal Corpse. Like, it was so wild watching kids do this. That was like the, oh my God, if kids can play this stuff, kids can write it. Mm. And I think within that same year, our social studies teacher, Mr. Stearns, it's the one class I went to. Like, I would leave school, I would just go back. I'd go to social studies and current events. And talking to Mr. Stearns about the world, that, again, these are like formative moments for me. It's like, oh, learn about what's happening in Africa right now, or whatever it was. This dude, one day we're doing current events, and this dude rolls in a TV and he presses play. He's like, you guys got to see this. Presses play, and it's Hanson Mbop. And he goes, this drummer is younger than all of you. He's like, that's what kids are capable of. And I just thought that was the coolest shit ever.
There's like, you know, obviously a tragic history of exploitation with it too, but there's such an interesting history of kids rock bands, and like you're saying, like the act of seeing a kid do something, which is ultimately what punk is, right? Like, you get to see, you know, like Kyle and Eric's band just doing it as kids, and there's something that's like, yo, I can just do this. Like, there's no reason I can't just be a person in a band.
Totally. No, it's Silverchair, dude. I remember playing hockey and being like, yo, this kid is like 2 years older than me, you know, so wild.
What did you grow up with music wise? Like, what were your parents into? Like, were there records in the house?
Yeah. Yeah. So we had this, my dad moved up to Alaska in 70, 71. Right out of high school. This is like Summer of Love, Back to the Land movement. And his parents were professors. My mom's parents were both professors as well. They ended up meeting in Alaska from the same town. Didn't know each other growing up. But my dad had moved up to, I guess in his words and his parents, like his parents really pushed this idea of like, go figure out where you come from. Like, go live off the land. Like, do the thing. So he and his friends went up to Alaska for the plan was they were going to go up there and for 3 years go their separate ways, live in the mountains and chase, and then come back after 3 years and meet in Talkeetna. And My dad went out there and takes his Great Dane with him. The Great Dane dies first winter.
Oh man.
Just totally unprepared for like
Yeah.
what Alaskan winters are about to be. But he lives out there. He's got a 5 gallon tub of grape jelly. It's like everything he could afford. He brought grape jelly because he knew he wouldn't have anything sweet. So he brings this with him. He's got salt, tarp, and the first year he builds like a little hunting cabin, which you like lay down and sleep in. And I don't know how he brought this stuff along with him, but he ended up staying out there for those 3 years, came back to town, and his friend group was not there. They did not stay for the 3 years. So he came back, he started working on these odd jobs and stuff, eventually met my mom. And it just, I guess that like always searching for something, always like, what's over the next mountain? He met Joe Reddington Sr. and Herbie Nyakpuk, who are the founders of the Iditarod. And he had built a shed for them, for Joe, and he's traded it for a dog sled and a dog team. And it took this like young family out into the woods to this cabin in outside of Talkeetna in Trapper Creek. And man, my first memory with music is out there. So I'm like 4 or 5 years old. We're out there, and he had brought his record collection for whatever reason. We have one room in this place, and I remember flipping through these records and seeing like Jimi Hendrix. I'm like, whoa, wow, like this dude looks so cool. And Revolver is there. These album covers. Just these album covers were so exciting to me. And we would, so we would, I would look through these album covers and we would listen to, it was mainly like AM radio and oldies radio. So it was like lots of like old blues and bluegrass, lots of like Roy Orbison. I mean, Gene Pitney, like the Supremes, all of the female groups were like really exciting to me. Like they were so cool, like the background vocals on all the early Motown and soul. And
So is
that's
this
pretty
like a
much all.
local, I was gonna say, is this on like some sort of local radio station or like where like that's playing this stuff? Because it's like not necessarily mainstream pop music, certainly at that point.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's
97.3
awesome.
FM. Like we got that, and then like a lot of like AM stations, like. That was kind of like the one that came in clearest, and that's all we really listened to up until I started playing hockey. So that's when I was introduced to Silverchair and Oasis and these bands. Like honestly, dude, like for the all of my life until I started playing hockey, and it was Champagne Supernova came on at the ice rink. I thought all the best music had been made. I was like, well, it all happened. Like they all did it. Like they did it in the 60s. It's the Beatles. Like it's these bands. These are the greatest musicians of all time. It's the greatest music ever. No need for anything else. And then I heard Oasis. I heard Champagne Supernova. And it again, like wheels turning moments was, oh my God, like when you make a band. I don't know why this didn't ever occur to me, but it's always like paying homage to something. It's always like, dude, nobody's original. Like nobody's coming out here like, I have a new sound. Here I am. It comes from nothing. Like it's all based on this like history and something that I've really learned traveling around, just doing meeting with tribes everywhere we go, through our foundation, PCM Foundation. The history of song is like this first chorus, like, okay, so that's what a song is. Like they all kind of have this same, like drive home the point in the chorus. To me, that's the way I would look at it. It's like, that's the point of the song. And then tell the story with the verses. And hearing Oasis, it was like, oh, this is just the Beatles. That's so cool. Like somebody did something new with the Beatles sound. And if I'm being like, I think they did it better. Like when they nailed the song, like Oasis was like, Holy shit. Like, you can't, don't look back in anger. Like, that's a song,
They've
dude.
got, like, I would say, like, Acquiesce. There's moments, but Noel as a lyricist, it's. I'm going to go Lennon and McCartney over Noel as a lyricist.
Hey, you know what? I read a really funny story. He was talking about Don't Look Back in Anger. He said they were in the studio, and Liam is sing like he plays a song for Liam, and Liam's like singing it back to him and like trying to remember the lyrics. And Noel's writing about like their mom standing him up beside the fireplace and quit laughing, get that look off your face. Like, he's like singing about all this stuff. And he gets to the chorus, and he said the way he tells it, he's like, he had some mundane lyric for this. Like, it was so boring. Like, he was just like, I need to fix that at some point. And Liam just starts singing, "So Sally can't wait. She knows it's too late." And Noel is like, that idiot, Liam. Like, he's so dumb. He didn't hear what I was saying, and he just sang this thing that is whatever that is. Like, who is Sally? Like, what is it? I love stories like that where it's like this dude misheard what I was saying and sang a better lyric that also means nothing, you know. But yeah, Lennon McCartney,
Well,
I'm with you. Lyricists, yeah,
I
of
find them,
course.
and I also like, I love the Gallagher brothers. I think there's something about their relationship, their interaction, and like, yeah, there's a sort of melody, and it's like an anti-melody in the way he sings too. That just is like, and there's so, that's why I wanted to talk to you about this at some point, because like, you're obviously someone that can write like this, but there's like sort of like this. Like, what is perfect pop? Like, what is there about a song where it just hits? And there's like something about Oasis where like if you were to write it out on paper, it's like a band that's kind of ripping off the Beatles, singer's not so hot, lyrics are, you know, they're Morrissey's feeling pretty safe right now as a lyricist type thing. But yet they do something that they're like a handful of people in the whole world can do, which is like cut through. With that as their formula.
Yeah. God, it's so interesting. Like, dude, when you break down Oasis, I love the opportunities that we've had in our career to work with like some of the greatest songwriters of all time. I mean, I've been working with Paul Williams a ton, and I absolutely love Paul. Like, this dude, like, you break down the rules of songwriting, and there's like, it's so funny because these rules exist because somebody intuitively did it and somebody wrote it down, went, oh, that's probably why that works. And there's truth to it for sure. But Oasis breaks all those fucking rules. Like, it kind of like it fucks you up because you listen to Wonderwall and you're like, is that the same verse again? Like, I think they sang the same verse for the second verse. And then you listen to it, and you're like, okay, well, everything's the chorus. So, like, great songwriters would be like, you need one note. The chorus has one note that doesn't happen anywhere else in the song, and it's that special note. And they talk about it. Oasis doesn't do that. It's the same fucking thing. Like, it's just start to finish. Like, there was something about that band. I think one of the smartest things that like any songwriters say is like, too much sugar is too much. Like, it rots your teeth. So like you always do kind of need this thing that feels dangerous within songwriting. And I think it's so funny to even like think about that as a rule. That's something that is naturally in you. And there is so much of that shit in Liam and Noel. Like, they are just like, they ooze it. Like, even if it's not in the song, it's just them. Like, they just do not give a fuck, and they are playing at the time. I've gone back to these bands like Happy Mondays and Stone Roses, and like I didn't hear them growing up, so like going back to it, it's so interesting that Oasis came out during this time when it was like kind of punk, like anti-chorus choruses, and they kind of did like Desiree, like they did things that were on pop radio with structure and melody that was not happening in rock music. They do it in a way that is, it's so unique to them and so wrong from a songwriting point a view. Like, it's not the blues. Like, the verses are for telling the story. You know, they're not even really doing that. And I find it so fascinating that it's just them as people. Like, they have that charismatic, like, explosive. Is he gonna shove the fucking award up his ass right now? Like, that's crazy.
Which I think is a lot of what's happening maybe in this era too now musically, where not saying everyone's writing songs like Oasis could write songs, but like it feels like Ice Spice as an artist has written some of the catchiest songs, like one of the biggest artists of the last few years. But you know, when you hear her on a song with Nicki Minaj, you're like, oh yeah, she can't rap like Nicki Minaj can rap. Like she's not necessarily going for these traditional skill sets that would have made someone a quote unquote good artist in their respective genres. Like, but she's got that thing, whatever that thing is, where the songs are catchy, but there's also just something about that personality that's just cut through. And it maybe it's not even a danger in this case, but there's something that's just captured the zeitgeist's imagination.
Yeah, dude, that's so funny. See, that's punk to me. Like, Ice Spice is punk. That shit is just like, I don't know how you stop it. Like, you can't stop it. That's the point. So that's one thing I've always felt about punk music is like it's not it's so wild to me when people are like, oh, that's not punk. Like, it needs to have like distorted guitars or like whatever it is. Like, there's so many. Punk to me is just that mentality of like, I don't give a fuck. Who the fuck is Radiohead? I don't care about Radiohead. What song have they written? Like, the way they talk about this stuff is like they're just being themselves and they are being honest. Like, as it pertains to me, like I don't give a shit, you know? I'm doing this and I don't care. Nobody's gonna stop me. I mean, there's so much of that I think is so powerful, and it's way more powerful than any like sound.
It's interesting though, because like you bring up Radiohead, or even when you brought the Happy Mondays, like even Oasis a little bit too. Like they all have these, you know, and once again, like not necessarily Ice Spice, but like, you know, more from the rock kind of world. It all does connect back to punk. Like Tom York played in Headless Chickens before Radiohead. Like there was like Happy Mondays were like going to like, you know, Manchester kind of punk shows or post-punk shows before they formed the band. And you know, Oasis is always repping the Sex Pistols. Like, it does have this tie back to this sort of, I don't know, like this the same place in a weird way. Like, you can connect all the dots.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's, yeah, you're just reminding me of this. Like, we just played a show recently. Sorry to make it about us for a second,
Dude, it's about you. If it's about me, I failed at this fucking job.
Let me make it about me for a second. No, I'm gonna make it about my daughter. There's something in those people that's like it's just bubbling up. Punk is just your first. To me, like I remember the first thing I ever learned to play on guitar and sing was Minor Threat by Minor Threat. And it was showing like, Zach, can you show me how to play this? And there was something just about like it's just that feeling of wanting to explode, and this is the quickest way I can get it out, and I can yell it, and it feels so good to like get that out. Watching all this like resurgence of like hardcore and seeing it all kind of like come back around in like the mainstream, it's like it, to me that kind of like points to like a deeper thing happening in music. Is there something bubbling up right now, and it's really exciting to see it. But so back to me. We were playing a show in Portland and I watched my daughter. So our daughter has this like, we'll probably talk about it later, but she has this nano rare disease and it's neurodegenerative. It's pretty terrifying. And I've just been trying to create situations for her where I'm like, she's got this, like, she's got that personality. She has this thing that like wants to come out. And I saw her side stage and she's 12 years old. We're playing a song that she sang on in the studio. And I waved to her and I was like, hey, you wanna like kind of gave her the nod, like you wanna come out? And she like jumps up and down, runs out on stage. And she grabs Zoe's mic and she starts doing this thing that was so like, it was such a like punk move. It was like hardcore. Like she's out there, she's like grabs the mic and she goes, "Hey," and she doesn't normally talk like this, but she goes, "You just remember your parents always love you, and if you have love in your hearts," she just g gave this like little speech really quick, and then she would start singing the words. Like we started singing, she starts singing words with us, and she'd sing something, and then she'd say something to the crowd, and then sing, say something, and then she starts doing this thing where she's going, "Hi, hi, I see you, I see you, I see you," and she's like pointing at people and just going,
That's
"I
awesome.
see you," and I thought it was, yeah, it was so cool. That's punk to me. Like that is that feeling of like you're saying the thing that I'm feeling. You're expressing yourself in a way. Like so I will say punk is not a leather jacket, but when you see somebody put on that leather jacket, you go, "Wow, you're doing the thing that is like it makes me want to do my thing. I want to put the tie the cape on and go to school and have the crown or like whatever, like the bunny ears, like whatever it is, and just be yourself, man. Like being fun, being a kid forever is that's like some real shit to me. Being a kid who's just like expressing like what we all want to feel when we go to a show, like you see me. That's a pretty cool
Well,
idea."
and that's what it is. Like it's the green light that says everything and everyone's form of expression is valid and can have space. And you don't need the talent. You don't need to workshop your skills. You don't need to, woodshed on your instrument. You can just get up there and do it and let all that stuff kind of fall into place later on.
Yeah, it kind of shows like again like so you go into those rooms with like songwriters and you it I think it's really
I don't get
exciting that
invited to a
people
lot of
do the
those rooms,
math.
John. Go figure.
But you know what? You're like the exciting thing for everybody. And that's what I think is so funny in those rooms is like they all want to be you. Like they like it's like I don't know. Honest pop is different than formulaic pop because both those things exist. Ice Spice, this is like honest. Like this is who I am. I'm expressing that. There are some really great pop songs, but it's so funny because they're all chasing that thing that you intuitively do,
Well, I appreciate that.
and you do it without
Well,
like
get me invited to some of these
well, you do
rooms,
it without
man.
like the
Get
notes.
me in these rooms.
Yo, you want to come? That would be fun as hell. Let's go make a mess, dude. Yeah, we'll see if we ever get invited back.
Didn't mean to cut you off on that point too. I kind of interjected there, and see, this is what I fucked up on. I inserted myself into your story now already.
No, I like it. Very, very Norm MacDonald of you.
We're both Canadian.
I love his
It's
interview
a
style.
Canadian. Me, Nardwar, Norm Macdonald, we're all cut from the same autistic cloth.
Totally.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But I like, you know, you brought up Paul Williams earlier, and he is, I've told you this before, he's my favorite songwriter ever, ever. And even though he told me when I met him, he after we did the interview, he came up to me, and he's my favorite songwriter ever, so I was running a little hot. He's like, hands me his number and his email address, and he's like, if you ever decide to get sober, please call me. And I was completely sober during this whole interview, so.
Wow. That is perfect. That's so Paul.
Yeah, but it's interesting you bring him up in contrast to Oasis, because what he does is like an impenetrable form of song. Like, it's perfect. Like, the melody, the lyrics, like, everything he does. Like, it's funny. It does stand in almost complete contrast to Oasis, and yet both are successful in what they're doing, and both are writing, you know, obviously, songbook songs.
Yeah, well, I mean, Paul definitely has the, like, it definitely had the personality too. When he talked, I mean, just even that conversation that you had with Paul, like, he was on Carson.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
All the time. Like, dude, he's on TV constantly and just wild and reckless. And you know what's funny? Like, no, just knowing him now, like, he's still wild and reckless. Like, it is so funny, like, hanging out with that dude. And, you know, so he's on the end of our album. He makes this appearance. I've written a lot of songs with Paul, and they're all so, dude, it's just the way he speaks. It's the most honest shit you've ever heard. He comes from this place where it's all so poetic. The way, like, he'll tell you about driving. I was driving to the studio, and, you know, they'll talk about the wind in his hair and just driving his car down the street, stuck in traffic, you know, and what the traffic looked like, and, you know, the shape it must have taken from the, you know, above, you know, like, he does this thing that Paul is just, he is one of my favorite people in the world to write with. So absolutely inspiring. And the end of our album, so he's talking to me in the studio. We were writing together, and I'm holding the mic it's just kind of how we do it. Like, we kind of do duet style, like, you're singing, I'm singing. And we were talking about what the last song in the album is about. And I'm talking to him about anxiety. And he starts writing, and he's kind of like, you know, bopping out some melodies and some lyric ideas. And then he just starts talking to me about anxiety. Well, everybody's scared. And it's like this forest fire is coming over the mountain. And it's biblical, it's cinematic. And he's talking about how if you don't get too caught up in that anxiety, because it will consume you. He's talking about how it's coming at you and you're watching it. You're stuck in, like, the beauty and in awe of this thing that's eventually going to sweep through you. And it just, to me, like, I don't know. I haven't really done a spoken word thing on an album, but it was so fitting. Like, he was, like, genuinely giving me advice, and it felt so right to end the album on this, like, bit of Paul Williams advice. You know, it only comes from that dude.
Yeah, he's got, like, I don't know, you see that in the documentary that came out about him too. Like, he has this kind of, like, compassion and the way of looking at the world that really comes through in this music. And not to get overly analytical on it, because I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm just a stoner, but, like, there's a, you could see how someone like that might need to dull that with drugs and alcohol at a certain point, like, to try and have the ability to take all, or to have that ability to take everything in and to being expressing it, and then that becoming your trade. I could see how that would grind someone down.
He thinks a lot. He's a deep thinker. For sure. Yeah, what an incredible person. I mean, he's just shifted everything to be caring for others. You know, he's the president of ASCAP. And I that's so, did I ever tell you how we
No, I
met
was going to
him
ask, like,
and
were
what
you familiar with
happened?
his music before you met him even?
Yeah, you know what's funny though is Kyle's a huge Paul Williams fan, our keyboard player. I am as well. We've never talked about it. So during making our third album, Censored Colors, we were staying in this basement. We're all sleeping in the basement together. There's one bunk bed, but we all slept under the bunk bed on the ground together. And every night we would watch Phantom of the Paradise. You
Best
know,
movie
we
ever.
like every
Oh my
single
God, my
night.
favorite movie.
Jesus! Like, I mean, it's so incredible. And we would watch that, and then we'd listen to Paul. And what's funny is we didn't really talk about this. Kyle wasn't in the band at the time. I wrote this whole album in 2 weeks. Like, it was, I think it was 2 weeks recording, and it was done, sent it out. So years later, this is 6 years ago, I guess, 7 years ago. We're playing this Music Cares event, and we're doing like Fleetwood Mac covers for Fleetwood Mac. We did a Lindsey Buckingham song, and he apparently did not like our version. Our
How did he
version
express? He left.
left.
Oh my God.
Which, fuck you, man. Whatever. Like, hey, we're just a band, man. Like, doing our thing. So we were walking back. So we're just at this event, and we're walking backstage, and Kyle goes, "Oh my God, guys, I got a picture with Paul Williams." Apparently, as we were walking by, Paul Williams was like walking by as well, and Kyle grabbed him and got a picture with him. So we post the photo, and Paul DMs us immediately. And he's like, "So nice to meet you guys. Would you want to write together?" I'm like, "Hell yes, this is Paul Williams." We fly him up to Portland. Dude, he came to us,
That's awesome.
flies up to Portland to record, spends 3 days, and it just the most fun, like most magical 3 days songwriting. Wrote a song a day, and the last night we're eating dinner together, and he goes, "Let's be honest, guys. The only reason you wanted to write with me is because I'm the president of ASCAP." And all of us were like, "You're what? Like, you're the president of ASCAP?" And Paul was just like, "You guys are such idiots, you know?" And it was just like kind of the perfect meeting for all of us to be like, "Yeah, we are idiots. Like, we're just fans of Paul Williams. Like, I had no idea he was president." He's like, "My name's on the checks, dude. Like, my name is on the plaque, you know?" He just had no idea. But funnily enough, like, even after that, Kyle goes, "You know, I've been on this Paul Williams kick, and I'm learning some of the old songs. Your song Created, it sounds so like such a Paul Williams song." And I was like, "That's funny, because that's all we were listening to when we recorded that album. We're just listening to Paul Williams." Kyle had no idea I even listened to Paul Williams. You
That's
know,
one
so
of,
funny having him see
oh,
that
that's
in there.
awesome. Well, because like I find like he's like one of those artists, and certainly Phantom of the Paradise is one of those movies that's like a secret code. When you find out that someone's into Paul Williams or Phantom of the Paradise, and I mean like really into it, you know it's going to be a fun hang because it's like, okay, we've got the bases covered on the best shit already. I've
Yeah.
always wanted to do like a. So I want someone to do like a revival or a tribute record to Phantom of the Paradise. Because you know, Tegan and Sarah are like unbelievably huge fans. Yeah.
Whoa, that's
I
wild.
guess in Canada, I think in Winnipeg, it ran and it still holds the box office record for the longest running film ever or something.
Yeah, you know, I just saw that on
It's
Reddit the
cool that
other
you're in a
day.
position now where you get to work with your heroes. And I think that's like, that's, I don't know, that's my, maybe because I haven't found any sort of commercial success with this music thing, but to me, that's like what this has always been about, is realizing that your heroes are actually your peers.
It totally, man. I'm trying to think. Yeah, Paul's just one of those dudes. He's just one of those people. I shouldn't even say dudes. Like, he's just like one of those people who is, he's so fun and so like immediately disarming. Like, you're like, this is like, I feel like I've known you forever, you know? Like, he's one of those guys that I love when you meet heroes that are like, oh, you could be like my dad's buddy,
I think that's probably
you
why he
know?
thought I was all fucked up on drugs when I met him, because I was just like, well, I've listened to your music for so long. You've painted such vivid pictures for me and watched all these interviews with you. So we're just buddies. So it's okay that I'm going to be real high energy on you right now.
Damn, dude, that, I mean, that's the nature of like the internet age that I think is so fun, and it's just so cool. Like, you see people doing like podcasts or TV shows. Like, the podcast and like YouTube space, I think, is the most I guess that's where you feel the most connected to people. Like, you hear them talk every single day and you're like, yeah, we're friends. Like,
Well,
I've known you
this was
forever.
pre-podcast. This is when I used to have my TV show on Much Music up here. I used to have a music video show that played alternative music videos, and I found out Paul Williams was coming. I'm like, we got to have him on the show. Like,
Get
get
him
rid
on
of
the
the Animal
show.
Collective set. We're putting on a Paul Williams video. Going back
Love
before you're like rubbing shoulders with the greatest American songwriters, how did Anatomy of a Ghost come together? Were you still in Alaska?
it. Yeah, I was actually. So, like, Anatomy of a Ghost is like this mashup, which I think is probably pretty clear when you listen to the music. There were these bands. There was a band called Nice Guy Eddie, from Alaska, who moved to Portland. And when they moved, this is like, we're like 18 years old. They moved as soon as they could. They're gonna pursue music. So Zach, our bassist, lives down in Oregon. That band moved to Oregon. I had started making these bedroom demos, and I was just making music. I honestly just wanted to like write songs. I didn't want to sing for a band. I didn't want to do any of this stuff, but I couldn't find anybody to do it with. So I'm like recording things like drum machines, guitars, and I'm singing on all of it. And I sent this stuff out to labels and this band. Just like, these are friends of mine. So I was like, oh, this is what I'm working on. Funnily enough, I got a call from one of these labels. So Lobster Records was one that wrote me
Oh, did
back, and they're
Lobster
like,
Records, what did they put it like Wild Herd, or like they were like a label that did some stuff with like strung out affiliated type bands or Lagwagon affiliated type bands, right? Yeah,
totally,
yeah.
totally. Yeah, they had a band called Mock Orange, I
Yes.
believe. It was Mock Orange on.
And wasn't like Nerf Herder at some point, or like maybe I'm confusing with another band.
Maybe so. That's, I mean, that
Okay.
sounds right. But Steve Lobster
Deep
Records wrote
fuzzy.
me, handwritten letter, was like, nice work. You know, like, we're going to keep at it. I'm like, okay, cool. I actually got a call from a hip hop label, because my number was on the CDs that got sent out. I got a call from this hip hop label, and I talked to him like three times. This dude was, he was really like just stoked. He's like, yo, I got this hip hop label. It's called Castlevania with a K. I've never found anything about it. And he's like, I want to put out your records. And we talk a few times, and he goes, but like, the last time we talked, he was like, so when am I going to talk to the girl that sings for the band? And like, I'm like an Alaskan kid, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm never singing again. I'll never talk to this person again. Like, I just never called him back. I was like, oh yeah, no, I'll have her call you. And I was like, oh man, what? I'm not coming across right, you know? It's something that I've like really come to embrace, you know?
I want you to know that I heard you on another interview mention Castlevania Records, and I was like, shit, what is that? And I think I may have found it on Discogs. that there was a Castlevania Entertainment that did one record by Eternal, which also featured Castlevania. And it's straight STR-8 from the dungeon.
Wow.
I don't know if it's the same one.
Can you send me a link to that?
Because I was like, when I heard that, I'm like, what the hell was this label?
Dude, I haven't found anything. Like, I'm looking for it, you know? Yeah, so funny. But, like, I decided I would never make music. I was like, I can't. Like, I need to find a singer. Like, I'm looking for somebody to do it because, again, dude, like, I'm just, like, small-town Alaska kid. And, like, I love Roy Orbison. I love Gene Pitney. Like, the reason I always fell in love with, like, falsetto and all this stuff is because I like the Supremes, mm-hmm. you know? I love Tina Turner. Like, I love Roy this Orbison. Stuff. And, yeah, Roy Orbison. I want to hit those, like, yeah. high notes. It was always so fun seeing my dad sing the falsetto on car rides. He'd sing falsetto on, you know, all these songs. Super fun. But these CDs had gone out, and I think it was like a year before Anatomy of a Ghost hit me up. So these guys, I had actually, like, that was the name on my demo, was Anatomy of a Ghost. Like, it was just like, that was the name of the thing. It wasn't screaming or anything. It ended up with my friends. So my friends get this CD and they call me. They say, hey, would you be cool with us calling our band Anatomy of a Ghost? I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm not using it. Like, I've like really kind of stopped doing that. So I'm just trying to write songs. They're like, okay, cool. Would you want to come down and visit us? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, I would love to fly down. Like, Warp Tour is happening or whatever's happening at the time. Like, let's go down there. I came down and it just started going to shows. And I was going to shows at like $3 shows with like 20 people there seeing bands that I knew. And going, whoa, another like wheel turning moment where I was like, oh shit, you don't need money to play music. Like, I was always under the assumption that you like made a lot of money playing music. And I was like, that's impossible.
Yeah, the myth.
You can't make money. You can't make money playing music. And then I went down to Portland and I saw $3 shows and $10 t-shirts. I was like, oh, you guys aren't making money, or like you're making gas money. That was really exciting for me. Weirdly enough,
like any bands tour up to Alaska? Like, I was trying to think, like, I imagine like bigger bands would, right? Like The Odd One.
Yeah, they did. So I saw, there's a few shows that I saw. There was a place called Gigs that was up there for a minute. And I think it was just really short-lived. But I went and saw Jesus Lizard.
Oh, wow. That's there. Awesome. I didn't know they did.
That was crazy. There was nobody there.
Probably why Gigs didn't last.
There was nobody there. And he was jumping all over the audience. I'm seriously like 16, 17 years old there by myself. And I'm like backed up in the corner of this dark room, like, please don't see me. Please don't see me. I'm like a really, really shy kid. Like, I'm so unbelievably shy. Like, I couldn't order my own food for the longest time. I mean, so I was like 25. Yeah. Like, I'm straight up like, I'm a woods kid. Like, I live in the woods, but I know about gigs. So I'm driving up to see every single show I could come across. Just, you know, I'm gonna walk downstairs real quick with this because Frances is getting back. She will run in here. Yeah, so I saw them. I saw Unsane.
Damn, that's the noise rock circuit.
Yeah. They played there. I think it was a lot of like bands with like random, like one hit, super deluxe. So I did see some shows. Agent Orange came up to Alaska quite a bit, actually.
I think it's no wonder why Gigs did not survive. Like, these are all shows that I would love to be at, but I think I can understand like why it might not have been the draw.
No, seriously. I could only imagine like how much they were paying to bring people up, and then nobody shows up. You know, I could probably count how many sold out shows I was at, but Yeah, they were always like really small. But again, I was thinking like you're coming up to Alaska, so you must be big. It was that experience in Portland that really like kind of set me on this like, okay, you don't need any of that stuff. I'm down in Portland and the guys in Anatomy of a Ghost go, hey, could we play a couple of your songs? And of course, I'm not using them. I want to be a songwriter. This is a perfect opportunity for me to be a songwriter. Please play my songs. Expecting that they were going to sing them. But I'm down there, so they go, well, will you come sing them? And I go, okay, cool. Like I'm going to do everything the opposite of what I would normally do, which is I don't like being in front of people. I don't want to sing. I don't want to do any of this stuff. I go to the first show with them, and I think I played like two songs with them. They played the rest of the set. I just did two songs, and then they booked another show because this is that time like when bands you just play like, can I play a show next weekend? Cool. I think it's weird because I'm in that mode right now myself where I'm just like, what the fuck happened? Like. Booking shows 6 8 months out, like, dude, we used to do that. Can I play tomorrow? Can I come in and do something? Like, what happened to that? I think it's so fun, but basically, what happened is we played five shows while I was down there. So, first one, I sang a couple songs. Okay, like they're gonna learn more of my songs, and this band is like fully a. Democracy and like Dewey loves hardcore, Joe loves Led Zeppelin. Yeah, I like the Beatles. Nick Simon likes what he likes, and it just ended up being this mashup of everything. And I think it's actually like a big reason it fell apart, mainly because we got signed off of like our fifth show. Rise Records was at our fifth show
Were they
we
just
had
starting at
played.
that point, Rise, I guess?
I think it had been around. I know we were the first band to recoup. I do know that much. And we signed like, dude, the contract is so whack. And I don't care if anybody says anything to me about it. It was a really shitty contract. Like, we'll split everything 50-50. It's like a paragraph, And yeah, in hindsight, yeah, 50-50. That's crazy. What the hell? Like songs and
So
everything.
is that
Yeah,
Rise
everything was
before
split.
Fearless?
Yeah, it was Rise licensed us to Fearless.
Oh, weird. So, because did
And
the record come out on Rise, or did it come out originally on Fearless?
originally came out on
Okay.
Fearless, or not Fearless, or on
On
Rise.
Rise.
Originally came
Ah.
out on Rise. Then we signed to Fearless. I don't know, like. If I'm like over or crossing any lines or whatever and talking about like all of this stuff, but when we signed, we did this deal. I mean, it was rad. The main thing we asked for was like a non-recoupable van. That was like all we really wanted, 20 grand for like gear, and we would figure everything out. But yeah, that's what we did when we signed to Fearless. And Anatomy never fulfilled any of that contract. That ended up being that's the contract that I took over.
It's interesting how, like yourselves and a band like Alexis on Fire, like there's these bands that are like kind of coming on to this sound organically. At the same time, there's like sort of a push in other places that had to get to the sound. Like it's interesting how there's two paths to wind up getting lumped into the kind of the screamo world. Like one is a sort of organic sound that you end up making, and the other thing is like very sort of, it seems like contrived, like we're going to be this type of band to do this and get in a Hot Topic and do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the nature of what you think a band is, and they can definitely be those bands. This is just my opinion on it. Our keyboard player at one point, Ryan, had a really funny way of describing our band. We were doing an interview in Germany, And the interviewer says, "Would you describe your band as a democracy or a dictatorship?" And Ryan sits back and he goes, "I think it's more of a democracy." And I thought it was so funny because it was definitely a dig at me, like being like, "Well, this is what it sounds like, you know." But we also all like contribute. That Anatomy of a Ghost was a full on, like, I was the singer of the band. I wasn't the leader of the band. There was like that was like Joe and Nick. That was like their band, the brothers. And it's kind of cool looking back at that stuff and being like, we all just kind of did whatever the fuck we wanted. Like that's all it was. Like, do we want yelling on this? Like, you should yell here. Like, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna yell. Like, okay, I'll do it. And I love so much of that. I just never felt like I had the voice for that, you know? Like I always wanted to have that, like to be able to shout and like get out my feelings in that way. And I do it a lot live, but yeah, I never really felt it on felt like I sounded good
I
doing
think
it.
it's like the most free position in any genre that someone can have in music. Maybe like, no, I think free jazz requires more technical ability, like performance art, like being a lead singer in a hardcore band or doing that kind of aggressive vocal. There's no other type of position in music that just says, okay, it's all about emotion, it's all about passion, there's no virtuosity. You know, there's obviously a skill to not lose your voice and not blow your voice, but at the same time, like, it's just completely free. Like, I had a friend of mine who's a rapper come in and want to do like a hardcore thing with me, and I was like, he kept trying too hard, and I'm like, no, dude, you don't have to try hard at all. Like, just go in there and just let it the fuck out. And there's no other thing in music that's like that. Like, everything else requires like a lot more thought to go into it, it seems. Maybe because I have no talent in anything but yelling in a band.
Dude, that as somebody who's tried it, I would say there's an extreme talent in it. And man, hardcore and punk to me, especially like how far it's come, like the tempo shifts and like everything that happens within it is like it's so ADD in the best way. Like I am ADHD, man. Like I bounce from one thing to the next. I'm like down for that like shift, but it is like full on emotion. Musically, it's full on emotion. It the technical talent that goes into that, and I mean, like we were talking about songwriters earlier. Like they're all trying to do that. And you do it with so much more like raw honesty and emotion than they're capable of in a lot of cases. And I think it's my favorite world to have toured in. I mean, like we do a lot of like really funny stuff now and sit down with Taco Bell and all of that. And all I can think about is like what Taco Bell meant to the
Well,
hardcore
Turnstile's got a
community of
Taco.
like vegan
Yeah,
straight
well,
edge kids.
Turnstile's got a Taco Bell song too, so it's still in hardcore.
It is.
It's fascinating how it like, you know, like it's so different, but yet it's ultimately still the same goal of like trying to make something that people relate to. And like, even if you're doing the harshest sound possible, like you could be the most blackened crust grind doom band, but at the end of the day, you want people to respond to your music. Otherwise, you just wouldn't ever play live. You just wouldn't put it out. You just do it for yourself.
Well, that's where like the honesty is so important. I mean, like we toured. Dude, I just pulled up a. Somebody posted a flyer of us: Poison the Well, Fear Before the March of Flames, Portugal the Man, and Heavy Heavy Low Low. And it just like it hit me with all this like, because that's the scene that we came up in, and I always found it so fascinating. Like this has always been music to me. So this is songwriting, like whatever it is, like pop songwriting, and just the power of honesty in music, the power of like being who you are. That's why like that never clicked for me because like I grew up on the Beatles and Motown. Like I like writing lyrics and I like the way the melodies connect, and I'm completely in awe of like the hardcore bands that we toured with and the punk scene and just how you are just saying exactly what you think and not sitting down to like, well, how does that word connect to this word? You know, like I grew up on Weird Al, man. Like I love how he plays with lyrics. Like I love that. And it's something that I feel like I can do in a way, but like I watch this thing that I absolutely cannot do, and I'm just like it absolutely just in awe. It's so powerful. It means so much to me. Like I see you. I see like Francis, I see you. Like doing that shit is like I love that feeling of being there and being a part of it, you
What's
know?
funny, you brought up Weird Al. Like, that is foundational, not to every single kid, I mean, but like, I guarantee more kids grew up relating and listening to Weird Al than probably the Beatles at this point, just because he's been a multi-generational artist at this point. Like, 30 plus years he's been doing it, 40 years.
Yeah, Al, I mean, we've always like we've said this since the beginning, like we would not be here without Weird Al. I mean, Yoda is, I mean, leave out like how problematic Lola can be today. It's a better song. Like Al did Lola better than the Kinks, man. Like Yoda is by far like lyrically one of the best songs I've ever heard. Like Al's delivery on it. Watching Al sing for Frances every morning. And she goes, I want to listen to Another One Rides the Bus. And I'm like, well, there's a song called Another One Bites the Dust. Do you want to hear it? It's not as good. You know, like she knows, like, yeah, Al taught us how to, I mean, he's such a great example in so many ways. Like he taught us how to not take ourselves too seriously. To see the joke in all of this, like in this world, like just parody is, it's so perfectly what music should be. Like it's fun. He's telling you a story and he's making you laugh. He sends you through so many different emotions when you listen to his music. And then he's introducing you to Nirvana. You know, he's introducing you to these
Yeah,
things.
like I don't think I've ever admitted this publicly, but I was a Guns N' Roses kid, and it was Weird Al's cover of Nirvana that got me into Nirvana, because Nirvana was the enemy to me. And then hearing Weird Al's parody, I'm like, okay, this band's awesome. So
They can't be
they
so
can't be so
bad.
bad. Maybe Guns N' Roses is the bad
Man,
guy.
you're a Guns N' Roses. You're a Guns N' Roses kid. That I find surprising for
Well,
some reason.
it's weird, but Izzy Stradlin played in The Atoms, a punk band from LA, and Duff McKagan played in all those Seattle punk bands, and you know they're kind of doing the New York Dolls meets Hanoi Rocks thing, but like obviously adding a little bit more of a harder edge to it. So I don't know. It's funny, like I obviously certain songs and certain lyrics they wouldn't even want to go back to at this point, and for good reason. There is something about that music, though, that I could see. Oh, yeah, I can see why that would eventually lead me to getting into punk music. And ultimately, Nirvana, I think it was just because I'm very partisan in my life, so I have to pick a side.
Yeah, that's funny. I missed Guns N' Roses. I mean, I pretty much just got introduced to Nirvana through Weird Al. I mean, I had like the same kind of route to it. I had these the church going neighbors, and they listened to Weird Al. So that's like another one of my like hockey and then neighbors listening to Weird Al. That's how I've heard a lot of those songs.
Well, I don't want to keep you forever, and this has taken a long time to come together, but I would love if you came back and did a part two at some time.
Let's do it. Let's bring Paul
Oh,
too.
man. Round two.
Can we bring
Round two.
Paul? Dude, I would love to hear Paul talk about what he was seeing happen.
I would be fascinated because you know what's also you and he inspired so many punk people with Phantom of the Paradise. But there's that one scene in Phantom of the Paradise where the record exec Paul is going through all the different artists doing the song. And you can hear it in all these different genres. And I forget if there's one that's kind of like a metal band that does it for a second before Beef does it. And I'm like, oh, I would kill for a whole record of Paul writing songs in this style. Oh,
yeah. Oh, dude. Like, he's my favorite person to write with. Let's do it. I feel like we should do something. I've talked to him a lot about doing like I want to make a prog record with Paul. Just because, like, his storytelling is so good, and just to take it on like a crazy journey would be so fun. Very linear.
Have you ever heard that Holy Mackerel record that he did? It's like it's his like first band. I think his brother might be in it too.
I don't think so.
Oh, it's awesome. It's like sunshine pop. It's just, it's wicked. You'll love it.
No way.
It's awesome. You'll dig it.
Yeah, send it to me. I'm like pretty specifically like, first of all, I don't remember album titles at all. It's funny because people ask me like for Beatles, like favorite Beatles songs. I'm like, I don't know. I put on the record and I know.
You're like Champagne Supernova. You know?
Yeah, Champagne Supernova is my favorite Beatles song. It can't be done better than that. Maybe Don't Look Back in Anger. Wonderwall, it's all choruses.
Well, this has been all choruses. And John, anytime you want another refrain, I'm always here to back you up. How is that for some music talk?
Is that music talk? Is that like a...
Right, I think...
Do you know what I learned the other day? I learned what a bar is. I learned what a bar
like
is.
Like that, you mean? Or like, maybe I don't even know. Like, what is it like?
Whatever you just did is...
yeah,
four
that's
counts.
It? Oh, good,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I got that. I got that.
Two professional musicians, one a Grammy winner, and we're just learning what a bar is.
Yeah, I learned what that was the other day, and it was pretty embarrassing. We were playing with the Colorado Symphony and this, like, 60-piece orchestra, and the conductor turned to me at one point because I'd come in singing, and he was giving me a funny look, and he goes, "It's 20 bars. You came in early." And I'm sitting there like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Like, what do you mean? What's a bar, dude? Like, I've never had to learn it. Now I know. I got it. I understand. Math.
Thank you, John, for coming on the show. And you heard right there, John will be back for a part two at some point in the future because we got more to talk about. Check out Portugal the Man live. Check out that record. Chris Black changed my life. And be back soon. John, come back soon. Bring Paul. We'll have a fun time. Speaking about fun times, coming up on the next episode of Turned Out of Punk, from the legendary band AOD, Dave Schwartzman will be on the show. And he has put out a fantastic book called If It's Tuesday, This Must Be Walla Walla, The Wacky History of Adrenaline OD. For those of you who are not familiar, AOD, Adrenaline OD, fantastic band from New Jersey, hardcore band from New Jersey, that links a lot of seemingly disparate parts of punk, hardcore, and metal. And we talk all about it on the next episode. Lots of good stories on this one. And that is it for today. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives and issues of Indigenous peoples all over the world matter. We need to protect trans kids and help trans people protect themselves and their rights. Stop hate and violence towards people of different faiths and different races. And because we're not talking about politics, this is just basic human rights. People deserve to be able to live free from hate, violence, and discrimination. And then we can worry about politics. So if there's organizations that are affecting positive change in your community, get involved. I'm sure they could use your support, your time, money if you have some to spare. And it'll help you feel better because... it just does. Speaking of things that help you feel better, get involved in your local punk scene. Start a band, put on a show, put up flyers. I don't know. Just get involved. Start a podcast even. there's lots of ways you can get involved. Podcasts, not as much, but there's lots of other ways you can get involved. Sign your organ donor cards, because by the time they come looking for those organs, you don't need them anymore. And it's just literally dead weight that someone's going to have to worry about getting rid of when they do whatever they're going to do to your body. So donate those organs, because it can perform miracles. I've seen it happen with my own eyes. And try meditating. I got into it a couple years ago, and it really has been a benefit to my life. And maybe it'll be a benefit to yours. And that is it for me. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, and see you on the next episode. Bye.